This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN Game Scoop. I'm your host, Samuel Claiborne. I'm here this week with Matt Kim, right here in the studio in San Francisco. Also joining me are Colin Stevens at home.
Hey.
Hey. And then Justin Davis at his Fortress of Solitude with other people and animals and stuff. I guess it's not too solid.
Several of us here.
We've got a masterpiece show for you this week. We're going to talk about a bunch of spooky games because it is that time of year. That includes Dead Space, Silent Hills, all of the Silent Hills. There's lots of them. Resident Evil 4, all these games that we're covering and playing a little bit right now. But first, today we got a look at the new Final Fantasy 16. Is that right? 16 is what we're at? Mm-hmm. Trailer?
That can't be right.
No, it's absolutely correct.
That means there's been 1 year since 1972. That's a Final Fantasy fact for y'all. In the trailer today, there was a lot of callbacks to Final Fantasy past, including summons and crystals. They're very, very big crystals. And from Kat Bailey's coverage, she mentioned that crystals are a famous part of Final Fantasy's lore going back to the original game. While they haven't been in every single Final Fantasy game, they're generally included as a more nostalgic element in the series. Their inclusion in Final Fantasy 16 suggests that Square Enix is intent on honing in on iconic imagery from the franchise despite differences like the action-oriented combat. So, Colin, I wanted to toss to you first. We got crystals, we got summons. Those are all old school things, but I believe I overheard today in a meeting we're all in that people are thinking this is the dark Final Fantasy, maybe at least compared to the Road Trip Boys, which I believe was the subtitle of Final Fantasy 15. What do you think of that?
I think this is absolutely the darkest mainline Final Fantasy that we've ever gotten. Generally speaking, Final Fantasies have been rated T for teen as far as the SRP has been around. And this one, I believe, is already rated M, but if it's not, it will be, because there's like some pretty excessive blood. And there's even like, we've gotten hints that there's like maybe sex scenes at the very least, like post coital stuff where people are just sort of lounging in bed. So it's
I believe
be
that
like
happens
much
in
more...
the Opera House in Final Fantasy VI. Isn't that why that
doesn't really?
No, it doesn't.
No. Okay, I was going to say, like, I completely misremembered that scene. But yeah, it seems like it's going to be a much more sort of dark and gritty Final Fantasy game, which, you know, isn't necessarily a negative or a positive, but the way that they've handled this looks really good. This looks like an extremely dramatic story without being melodramatic, which is, you know, often the case for Final Fantasy. But a lot of the story is being handled by people who did Story 14 and a lot of its expansions.
Oh, really?
It's an amazing story. So
that's a Matt Kim jam over
really
here. Still play.
See, here those people post, you know, the deed. And the combat, one of the big combat designers worked on Devil May Cry 5, which has incredible action combat. So this feels like a no-brainer that this is going to be an amazing game. And they even mentioned today that, like, this game is finished. They're just polishing it for the next, like, I don't know, 9 months until it comes out in summer 2023. So this game is going to be, like, polished to an absolute sheen. I think that Square is really banking a lot on this game because I think they're tired of Final Fantasy having a sort of, you know, not super consistent high quality lately. Honestly, mm-hmm. honestly, it's been since probably 12 that it was pretty widely agreed upon that that was a great game. Mm-hmm. 14, of course, has a huge amount of support, but that one's an MMO, so it's slightly in its own category. But, you know, with 13 and 15 both being good, but not necessarily, you know, up to snuff games in the mainline series, I'm so excited for this. And the story looks so cool, and, like, it just, there's so much drama and blood and violence.
Who's the fiery summon here? Is that Ifrit?
That's Ifrit.
Okay.
That's Ifrit, yeah.
And then Bahamut's the dragon, right?
Yeah, and so the whole sort of gist of this game is there's these multiple cities, they all have their giant crystals, but they've been, like, slowly dying for the last 1,500 years, and the Earth has been dying for the last 1,500 years. So you're starting this game in a very desolate, desperate place, and each of these
That's what makes it the Final Fantasy, always.
Finally. After 16, it'll end. These crystals pick people in their kingdoms to be their dominance, and the dominance house the summons. Which is, we're getting into the nitty gritty here, but basically each of these,
where are you people, getting this stuff from?
Oh, it's been pretty common knowledge that they've been,
are there, like, press releases or something with this, like,
yeah,
background
information?
They've
been talking about this for a long time, and they've been talking about it even more today.
That's so cool.
But basically there's just specific humans that are picked that house these summons inside of them. And then they bring these summons out and fight each other. Mm. And what I'm guessing is the main character, his name's Clive. Which is a silly name, but whatever. Sorry to any Clives out there.
There's a game series with Cloud and Squall, and you focus on Clive as being the silly name.
That's true. It's silly because it's normal. Yeah. That's why I'll say that.
It sounds cool in these crystal cities, though.
Yeah, and he's got this little brother who's the Phoenix dominant, and it appears that his little brother's going to die, and that's what sets off his, like, story of revenge. But it looks like he will probably be taking these powers and abilities from different dominants as he travels throughout the world. And he's like, it seems like he's going around killing all of these people. And then once he kills these people, he gets their powers.
Oh. Would you say he's going rogue?
I mean, he kind of, yeah.
It's an X-Men joke.
I like that it's these, you know, and again, we don't know, like, we're basing off trailers and, like, plot synopsis. So who the heck knows? But, like, based off what we've seen so far, it doesn't seem like there's some big evil that is being fought against, but instead it's kind of warring nations. Like, it's kind of Game of Thrones-esque in that way. And, you know, and you know, Final Fantasy Tactics and other, you know, Square Enix games have taken that approach too. Mm-hmm. That's very intriguing and very interesting to me. I happen to really, really love and have a soft spot for Final Fantasy 15, but I recognize and acknowledge that I'm in the minority there. Yeah, the Road Trip Boys, like, I love it. That game has a really special place in my heart, actually. But Colin, you're exactly right that Square Enix seems to be really, really taking their time to make sure that this is, like, you know, a breakthrough mass market success in a way that, like, the Final Fantasy mainline games have been on a little bit shaky ground for a while now.
Matt, what are your thoughts on this big old reveal? Are you a Final Fantasy person beyond 14? I should ask first.
No, I mean, not beyond 14. 14 is the only Final Fantasy
that's
game
the
that
one.
I play. Yeah, it's the only one that
you
I play.
You should start with one after this.
I've heard that's not true. I've heard people say
it's,
don't.
It's got elves.
One's really good. Yeah.
Okay. It's pretty dwarfs? Short. You can get through it pretty quickly.
It's got pirates.
It's got a big shark.
Strangers in Paradise, which is a faithful remake of one, is what I've heard.
Yeah, but does Strangers in Paradise have Montoya's cave in it, which that song hits. It slaps so
you can
so
talk
much
to brooms,
Matt.
Okay, hold on. 14 has Montoya's cave in it, and you can talk to brooms in that.
What?
Wall. Yeah. So,
really?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah,
14
is,
goes deep into
well,
the.
Well, you've
reference.
Sold me on 14.
So yeah. I've already seen Montoya's cave and her talking brooms, but anyway, but yeah, I'm really excited for this one. strictly because of the 14 connection. You know, let's call them says a lot of the 14
pedigree, right?
The pedigree is all mostly 14 people, and like even the synopsis is actually kind of vaguely 14-y. Like 14 has a lot of, I mean, this was a couple expansions ago, but when it began, it was a lot about warring city states, you know, like different factions in this
world. That makes sense for an MMO. Right?
Yeah, right. And so it was one of the same things. So like I was watching this trailer and there's all these like little fiefdoms going like, well, we're the best fiefdom. And I'm like, this reminds me a lot about 14. Mm-hmm. You know, there was also 14 has a huge sort of like the story leans heavily on crystals and icons or mm-hmm. and titans and stuff like that. And so a lot of those elements are reappearing in 16, which is great for me because again I only played one Final Fantasy game, but also, you know, it's nice. It's I think for me personally I'm really excited for it, and you know, whatever, maybe it'll get me into the other ones.
So I have to ask our expert panel here, has anybody seen a Moogle?
Oh,
zero Moogles. What about,
you just mean like it, on this earth, like what?
No,
do you mean?
In 16
in the game
stuff. Yeah,
no. I think okay. There might have been
okay
one,
so we got a maybe on Moogles. What about chocobos?
Yes.
Yes.
We've seen chocobos, so like chocobos confirmed. And then finally, airships?
I don't know.
Okay, so that's a maybe, but, too. And then the bonus round, have we seen Cid yet?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so.
Is Cid in 14?
Cid's in 14.
Okay, well, there you go. Cid, those are the four elements that are in every Final Fantasy game. Because as we heard at the beginning of the segment, crystals only in some.
Mm.
I think Cid didn't show up until Final Fantasy 2, actually.
He's not in 1.
Yeah.
Well, but that's of course true, and that, you mean Final Fantasy IV, but maybe is he in Final Fantasy II? JP, no, he's in 4. He's from Ooh. 4, right?
I believe he's in 2. Yeah. The Japanese. Version,
my favorite Cid moment in Final Fantasy IV/2, which I respect the use of 2, by the way. I'm not trying to correct that. Is when Cid falls for a long time and the sprite just spins like this in midair, falling. It is a great Cid moment.
I'm out. Go ahead.
No, please.
I'm just, all I wanted to say is, final thoughts. I'm of the opinion that the best Final Fantasy games focus on summons, 6, 10, and maybe this one. Mm-hmm. And so whenever they really lean into that as a big sort of plot device, you usually get some of their best stuff. So
I think it's cool too. It's like a lore connection. Mm-hmm. That's like the mm-hmm. old gods type stuff. And I've never played a Final Fantasy where that's really a focus. Out of the ones you mentioned, but you know, like Rydia is like a major character in 4 that's like, you know, can make these summons. That's a big plot point. And I guess you're right, like 6, that's a big part of it too. But nothing like the trailers for those games, had they existed at the time, wouldn't have been like, wait, do you see, you know, Bob? But they didn't care.
You could suplex a train though.
you could only in the original versions, right? Because they nerfed the train suplex in one of the reissues, and I believe it's been fixed since then. From our story, Final Fantasy 16 is currently in development for PlayStation 5 as a timed exclusive. It is also expected to be released on PC, but Square Enix has not yet confirmed an official release on PC. It's currently slated for summer 2023. So next time we do, what's the segment called where we look at games from the future? Do you remember what those are called? GameScoop? I don't know. It's called that kind of games or something.
Nobody knows.
Anyway, when Damon features that, we'll have to remind him that there's also a summer game coming up. Everything else comes out before summer, though, so that's nice to have a summer game.
This episode of GameScoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the US. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop. 1 in 5 Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Let's talk about all the Silent Hills. There are a lot of them.
Oh boy.
So in a stream yesterday that was sometimes awkward and wasn't very live in the end either. It was kind of dropped as a video on demand video on YouTube, which you could just watch instead of a stream. That was kind of a mess. It also leaked right before it. We got a bunch of information I think we already kind of knew about Silent Hill, including that Bloober Team is working on a game in the Silent Hill series. Yep. It is called Silent Hill 2. It is going to be a remake of Silent Hill 2. Now, Bloober Team, for those who might remember, made The Medium, another horror game. Let me run down the list of the other games that were announced, and then we'll talk about them all. I need them explained to me. I'm not a Silent Hill player. So then we have No Code, the developer that made Observation, which we gave a 9 out of 10 to, by the way. Double A is what they call this developer size. It's not a triple A developer, but a developer that made a good game that's more on the indie side. They're making a game called Silent Hill Townfall. Neo Bards, which is a Capcom outsourcing company. So to this point, I don't think has led a project. They're doing a spinoff set in 60s Japan. Yes, please. Called Silent Hill. Just kidding. It's called Silent Hill F. And then multiple studios, including Bad Robot. Yes, that one. They apparently have a game development wing. Are working on a game called Silent Hill Ascension. And then Christopher Gans, the director of the first Silent Hill movie, is making a third movie in the series with Return to Silent Hill. So that's four games and a movie. I wanted to start with Matt, who participated in a lot of our news coverage of this. Were there any actual surprises in this?
So Bloober Team is working on a full Silent Hill 2 remake, which is like one of those ground up remakes, like, you know, Resident Evil 2 HD or remake, stuff like that. I'm getting it all mixed up now, but it's not an HD remaster. We already had one of those and that was terrible.
So what was terrible about the HD remaster?
So this came out right around the time where there were a lot of like really cool remakes happening from Bluepoint.
The Sony, like Shadow of the Colossus is one of them.
Exactly, right? And so they were knocking it out of the park with all these HD remasters, and a lot of people were excited for a similar treatment for Silent Hill HD, which was going to do an HD remaster of 2 and 3. And what people got was not that. It was, it looked not that much better than the original PS2 versions. A lot of the assets were replaced with really like low quality versions of it. So there's like a really famous example where there's a scene in Silent Hill 2 where James comes to Silent Hill and there's a sign that says "Welcome to Silent Hill," and the font that they use in the HD remaster is like Comic Sans or something close to Comic Sans.
That's great.
And people are just like, "What is going on here?"
It's not just that like they cleaned up some polygons and that wasn't enough. They like nerfed it.
Just ended up way worse than the original, to the point where people were just like, "If you have a PS2 copy, just play that because it still looks better than this 3 HD version."
And the single biggest sin, if it's the correct version I'm thinking of, is they removed the fog, which is like the staple of the games, right?
It's not that the fog was removed intentionally. It just didn't work. Like you could see...
just like the Ocarina of Time port on Switch recently. They're like, well, we're going to clean everything up. So they just magically erased a bunch of the draw distance fog, but that made the murky intentional fog areas look really silly.
Exactly that. Yeah, it was bad. But this is not that. This is a full remake using Unreal Engine 5. And they talked about using a lot of the Unreal Engine 5 features that Epic Game has been talking about for the past year. So they're using like their illumination technology, like nanite, and their physics technology. So it looks good from the trailer that we've seen, but that's all we have so far. So we'll
and why don't we have a remake of one before? Like, why do people want Silent Hill 2 specifically? From what I understand, there is a remake of one that people like, right?
Yeah,
Shattered Memories.
I personally love that one. Mm-hmm. That one was a reimagining, so it wasn't like a straight one-to-one remake. And so
kind of like the Resident Evil remake on GameCube.
Pretty much, yeah. So they took the idea for one where the dad is looking for his missing daughter and then kind of add in like new twists and elements. I highly recommend it. I really like it, but it's not a faithful remake like what 2 is looking to be from Bloober.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this looks like the thing that people want.
Yeah. 2 is usually regarded as like the best one in the series.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. What other games should we be excited about in this bunch? Who wants to weigh in on that?
Silent Hill F.
Yeah.
Okay.
For sure. I'm actually more excited about Silent Hill F than I am about the 2 remake. Because it's 1960s Japan, like you said, which is a very interesting location.
Is there a lore connection to Japan at all in Silent Hill so far?
Not really. Not really. Yeah.
It's Silent Hill is some American, I don't know, town. Pacific Northwest ish town or something,
yep.
Right?
Yep, it's always been an American town.
Okay.
A lot of the lore has to do with America, so it's going to be really interesting to see what they do to bring that story back to Japan.
Okay.
Yeah, and the visuals in this trailer, which is just a CG trailer, are pretty extraordinarily, they're beautiful, but also like pretty horrifying. And if you have tryptophobia, which is the thing when there's like holes in like skin,
right?
You'll get freaked out because all this like seeds are growing out of people's skin. And it just looks really cool. My boss, Bob, has a theory that it's called Silent Hill F because the F stands for 5, and this is actually Silent Hill 5.
Come on.
Ooh. So that, I honestly, it makes sense to me.
It's not just flowers?
It could be Silent Hill Flowers. It could.
They're like, flowers isn't cool enough. What do we call it? How about just that?
So if that's true, that's awesome. That's just a complete, you know, speculation. This looks so cool. Look at it.
It looks great. One thing I want to talk about F is that it's actually written by a Japanese visual novel writer named, he goes by the pen name Ryukishi07. Mm-hmm. And so he's the creator of like all of these incredibly famous Japanese visual novels, the Higurashi series and the Umineko series that are all like murder mystery series with like supernatural elements to them.
Perfect.
Yeah, which is like perfect for the series. Mm-hmm. Like he's super, super well regarded. His works are like super famous in Japan. And his works are just like, for example, the Higurashi series is about a small town, like similar to the one that we're seeing in this teaser. Mm-hmm. And just gruesome murders just keep happening like in a time loop. And these kids have to like figure out why is essentially the premise of it. And so I think he's like a perfect fit for a Silent Hill game.
Nice. Has he worked on a video game before? Is this kind of the foray into video games?
I mean, the visual novels are video games, if you
will. Well, okay. That's what you mean by visual novels. Yeah, playable games.
Playable games, okay. Yeah.
Got it. What's going on with the Neo Bards one? Or sorry, the No Codes one, the Silent Hill Townfall. Now, we just basically got a cinematic trailer for that one. And it's kind of like, that's the one where it zooms in on the TV for a long time.
TV and the little radio.
Yeah, do we have any idea what type of game that is?
So No Codes makes a lot of like games where you're sort of kind of a passive participant. So Observation, for example, you're actually playing as a security camera system on a like a international space station kind of thing.
Oh, cool.
And so you're just switching between cameras and then like zooming in and looking at clues and picking up puzzles and stuff like that. And so that's sort of what they do with their other game that I didn't play, but I hear it's a similar sort of like you're actually interacting with systems and functions rather than like playing characters.
That doesn't sound like a bad match at all. Yeah. So far, this is hitting out of the park, I think, for horror games in Silent Hill. What about the multiple studios game Silent Hill Ascension?
I have no idea what to expect.
What the heck is this thing?
It sounds like a Let's Play is kind of what it sounds like, where people are watching a story unfold in real time and they kind of input inputs and maybe vote on what the characters.
So the trailer is like text messages, and then the description is about participating in something live.
Yeah,
that's basically all we have.
Yeah, where fans just get to decide the fate of the characters and how the story unfolds. So it's that one's like really experimental, but behavior is involved with it. They make Dead by Daylight.
Yeah,
so a weird but interesting potential project.
Yeah, there's not really a bad developer attached to these games in the bunch. Or there's something cool in the development side of each of these, basically.
Yeah.
It's very interesting that Konami isn't apparently making any of these in-house. Mm-hmm.
which, mean, they don't really like
make games anymore.
Yeah. That's like a similar, like, yes, you know, the thing that I'm most excited. So I don't really like spooky games, as people know. So like none of these Silent Hill games are Justin games, but at like a bigger level, what I'm excited about is, you know, people give Konami such a hard time about sort of devolving into a pachinko machine and weird mobile game company. Like that's kind of what they've become since their breakup from with Kojima. You know, they're not really making Castlevania. They're not really making
Metal Gear
or Silent Hill. And so like whoever over there is in charge of sort of the brand management of Silent Hill hit such a home run where, you know, we'll see if these games actually turn out great or not. Like, you know, we have to go through the motions of actually making them and launching them and finishing them. But like the alignment of like who's making what and sort of the brand approach is just impeccable. Like it's perfect, right? So that gives me a lot of hope and faith that like hopefully Metal Gear and Castlevania and these other beloved franchises will be treated similarly down the line.
Wouldn't it be hilarious if they just shopped out Metal Gear to Kojima Productions?
I mean, you know, yeah, or Castlevania too, right? Like, you know, definitely that's, I don't think, well, the Kojima one's probably outside of the realm of possibility, Castlevania could come back, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, how exciting would it be, you know, next year at this time we get the Castlevania 4 games announced at once, right? Mm-hmm.
Right.
And it's been a rumor for a long time that someone could be remaking Metal Gear Solid 1. For a long time, it was Blue Point that people sort of attached that to. But Blue Point most recently said that the next thing they're working on is a brand new IP. So they probably wouldn't be doing that. But
About a remake. Now, why does that sound familiar?
Right.
They're making Steel Screw.
Well, now it feels much more possible, you know, now that it's happening for Silent Hill 2. You know, they could shop this out to a really good developer. And
right.
We could get a really good Metal Gear Solid 1 remake. We have technically gotten that before. That was one that was universally.
So only one of these games has a release anything, I believe, and that's Ascension will be live in 2023. The rest of these don't have dates attached. You can correct me if I'm wrong there, but I believe that from reading all the news articles, that's
yeah, I think you're right.
At.
Yeah.
So something weird to play next year from Silent Hill. Maybe the others are down the road. Is there maybe, I should have looked this up. There's no way to know now, but the Silent Hill 2 anniversary might be some year coming up. Maybe. Yeah,
nobody knows.
2004, yeah. I believe, is when it came out.
Okay, so 2024 would be appropriate, right?
That might be wrong.
20 years.
Silent Hill 2?
Yeah, that might have been earlier, probably 2002, now that I'm thinking about it. So it'd be this year if it would be the 20 year.
Well, let's save speculating on release dates for 20 questions. And we'll go right into our discussion of another spooky period, holiday appropriate game, Resident Evil 4. Right before we hit record on this, we had a 30-minute live stream of Resident Evil news, and the biggest news out of that was Resident Evil 4 stuff. They basically showed a trailer. We also have a preview up. Check it out. It's really cool. Dale Driver got to play Resident Evil 4, and so did Brian Altano, and they got a lot of footage of it. We did a couple of cool things. We compared Resident Evil 4's 360 later version with this in graphics. So check that out. It's a great video. And then the preview itself actually explains a lot of the new stuff, which I didn't know what to expect, right? Because it's like, is this game going to be a remake of a wonderful game that doesn't need any polish? Or is it going to be a remake that adds to it? And why would you do that? Well, now we have a little bit of an answer to that. So let me go over some of the changes I've noticed and that we noticed in our preview. There are very few of them, but one of them is that there's different story beats. So right when the start of the game happens, there's a famous scene with a dog. A completely different thing happens in this game. Completely different. Check out our preview to see what that is. And you know, I don't want to spoil it for long-term, I guess, Resident Evil fans, although it's pretty interesting. There's also crouching, stealth, and stealth takedowns as a big part of the game now. You actually, or I don't know if it's a big part of the game, but it's part of our preview in which you could actually like avoid fights and get through a whole house without triggering enemy attacks. And then the final one that Matt and I were remarking on before this is that there's counterattacks. So I forget the official name of the big chainsaw fellow, but he attacks with his chainsaw and Leon has a chance to hit the L1 button and hold up his little knife, and then the chainsaw grinds it, and it's just the most tense, crazy scene you can imagine. And that's saying something because usually what happens in that situation is you just get decapitated for an instant kill, which is one of those moves in Resident Evil 4, which I just have to really respect. So I don't think everybody here has seen the preview coverage because it's about to come out right now. But what did you think of the Resident Evil 4 stuff today? Let's start with Matt.
Yeah, I loved everything that I saw. It looks really, really good. I think I was one of those people who maybe originally was like, I don't think Resident Evil 4 needs a remake, but I've loved 2 and 3. I've loved every remake Capcom has made so far.
They're so good.
Yeah, they could, honestly, they could announce that they're remaking 7 next year and I'll just be like, yeah, I'm down. You know? At this point, I'm just like, yeah, okay.
Because they've taken the core games and improved them each time to in such an interesting way. Right?
Yeah, like they've done such a good job with remakes. It's not just new visuals and new graphics and stuff like that. Like they change up, story elements. They change up gameplay elements. Like everything, like 2... I'm going to say it right here. Resident Evil 2 Remake is the best Resident Evil game in the series.
It's incredible.
Yeah. And so every time that they're just going to announce more remakes, honestly, I just like, yeah, I'm down. Whatever you're going, whatever you want to remake, I'll play it because they've all been great.
Now, Justin, I know you don't like the spooky games. Did you break your streak for Resident Evil 4 at some point?
Yeah, I mean, Resident Evil 4 might be one of the last horror games I played.
Nice.
Like horror games are not necessarily my thing, but like Resident Evil 4 is just a really impeccable, perfect action game.
Right.
And it's kind of not that.
That was a criticism at the time, remember? People were like, it's not even horror, it's just action. And now it's like, it's the best horror game.
And, you know, very similar to Matt, I like in my head, I'm like, you know, that game's really remarkable and impeccable and doesn't need a remake. But then watching the remake footage, I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. You know, there is kind of a lot of, you know, modern, like now thinking back on 4, like for the time, you know, absolutely a 10 out of 10, but, you know, controls slightly clunky, you know, some story beats, you know, able to be expanded and unpacked on, you know, seeing this footage, if you're watching GameScoop right now, seeing them back to back, you know, I think it's clear sort of the opportunity that Capcom has to, you know, embellish this, you know, one of the all-time greats and just one of the all-time classics. And it seems like, you know, it sort of is carrying forward that je ne sais quoi that like made 4 so remarkable, which is totally like intangible. It's just a gut check, right? Like, oh, it seems to be getting that feeling right.
Mm-hmm. One other difference that I've noticed in watching this footage is that this is strange to even think about now, but I played it recently on Switch and I had totally forgotten that this is a stop and shoot game, right? You stop and then you shoot originally. Mm-hmm. And that's new in this, that you don't do that anymore. You can run around and shoot, which means that there has to be other tricks employed to make like a crowded village of, you know, villagers like encroaching on your space, like to maintain that claustrophobia, you have to do a bunch of other things. So the game just, that alone is just going to change the game. Yeah.
It's interesting. I adore Resident Evil 4. I think it's one of the greatest video games ever made. Still, it just is impeccably designed pretty much front to back. And there's just so many tiny little decisions that add up to this incredible experience. But I couldn't really unabashedly recommend it to everybody, largely because of that control scheme. I think a lot of people, especially nowadays, have a hard time playing that game if they hadn't played it before, because it has that very interesting stop and shoot design. And as much as I love it, and as much as it plays into that overall design that works so well for that game, they couldn't have brought that back. They had to use the sort of newer third person Resident Evil 2 and 3 remake sort of core design. And what's interesting is Dale mentioned this in his preview, but overall the tone is a little bit darker, a little bit less silly, which initially had me a little bit worried that it wouldn't be silly at all, that there wouldn't be any Leon quips.
Right.
However, in both the stream and in our preview, there is a moment, and you can see it was in the footage a second ago. You can shoot an oil lamp, set a cow on fire.
Yeah.
That cow will run over villagers, set them on fire, and the Leon goes just like, "You can bill me for repairs later."
Yeah.
And it's just so funny. It's like, okay, classic Leon's back. Like maybe in the original Resident Evil 4, if you could do that, he would have gone even more ridiculous. Like he might've said something like, I guess they don't like their steaks well done, or, you know, something super stupid like that, but they still have that in there to some extent. And in the preview, Dale mentioned that the bingo line is still in, which is very important.
And the merchant's back. And that's always a goofy element, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe it wasn't intended to be goofy, but boy, did it become so widely known and memed out, right? That brings us to What Hast Thou Been Playing? Our segment on what we've all been playing. I got an exciting one for y'all this week. This guy right here, Matt Kim, has been playing Dead Space.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, not currently. I went to a preview event and I played Dead Space for a couple hours. So I'm not playing Dead Space now.
No.
But I did play Dead
Space. Oh, you're recording a podcast now.
Well, he was playing a game on his phone. Just no.
Yeah. Well, we can talk about that. Justin can talk about that one later. I played Dead Space Remake for a couple hours at a preview event. The preview is live now on IGN. You can read all about it. But I really liked it. And it's actually really funny because my preview hit on some similar things that Dale wrote about in his preview for Resident Evil 4 Remake, in that it's not about revolutionizing the whole thing. Like, it's still Dead Space as you know and love. It's just making this already great game even better, even deeper, and adding depth to it. And so, like, it's one of those things where you kind of don't really remember Dead Space looking bad or playing bad or sounding bad. It's just, like, in my memory, like, the 2008 game still, like, was great.
Yeah.
And you're playing this one and you're kind of just like, yeah, this is sort of how I remember it being, which is it looks good and it plays good. But then you kind of look back at footage and you're like, oh, that's an old game now. Like the Ishimura looks really like polygonal in 2020 and 2022. And so you're looking at all these graphics and blood and gore, and you're just like, oh, okay, so this is just that, but, you know, made with now technology. And
part of your coverage, you mentioned that the ship you can traverse all the way to the front, to the back, like the whole game. Do you think they're going to play that up as like a gameplay element, or is that just like a thing they're like, oh yeah, you can backtrack if you
want. So that's actually really cool. Okay, so yes, you can you could traverse the ship in its entirety front to back seamlessly without any load times or any cutscenes like that. And because of that, they had to come up with a new solution to a weird side effect that happened, was that if you already clear a room, you know, you've already beaten a room and you know that there's no bad guys in there and that you've already seen like the jump scare in there, you're not really scared to traverse back or to that same room. But they didn't want that to happen. So they have something called the intensity engine, I want to say off the top of my head, like something like that, the intensity engine, the intensity modifier. And basically it rolls a dice of like random elements that could pop up at you. So it's not like a roguelite or anything like that. It doesn't change the room in any significant way, but you can go back and depending on, you know, what the decision of the engine is, it could like add a hiss that wasn't there before, like a steam hiss, or it could add crawling noises in the ceilings, or it could even just drop a necromorph on you, you know? And
but so, you only have so much ammo in that game. Yeah. It's so bad if you have extra necromorphs.
Exactly. So it's one of those things where like they've added this thing where like, well, the Ishimura is now fully traversable, which means people are probably going to backtrack, which means people are probably going to visit areas that they've already visited, and maybe they're not going to be scared anymore. So the people at EA Motive figured that out by adding this little like small little randomizer to it. Then that's a really cool solution.
Does this game look next gen in its current form? Really?
It looks next gen. Yeah, it looks great. I think it's only announced for PS5 and Xbox Series X and X, X and S. And F and F. The Xbox F. It's set in 1960 Japan.
The Xbox 5?
It works on so many levels.
It looks next gen. It looks great. It sounds amazing. I'm really excited for this one. It's a good time to be a horror fan.
Did they put you in one of those preview rooms where you had like the best headset ever and were sitting in the dark, and so it was especially spooky?
I can't say about the headset, but I was in the dark. And actually, one of the funny things was, as I was recording gameplay for it, and they had a little like webcam on the desktop thing, and I don't think this was for media. It might have been for like an idea for a different event or something like that. But when I turned on the recording, it did that thing where it was also recording my face while recording the gameplay. And I was like, oh, what's going on here? It's like, oh yeah, let's just like see if you're scared, but we can turn it off. So I had it turned off because I didn't want
to see if you're scared.
Yeah, but I didn't want to look at my face when I was playing this video game, so I had to turn it off politely. But
consumer information, mining it all the time, right? That's hilarious. So all of us are playing fun games. I'm going to get to the one that Colin and I are playing, but Justin and Matt are both playing a game called Marvel Snap. What's going on with Marvel Snap, Justin?
That's a good snap.
Really good snap.
But my other hand can't even snap, so.
Wow, interesting. You should get hired by Nintendo.
That was a Nintendo-esque Snap. Yeah, so Marvel Snap is more than just a pretty face on the card game scene. So it's made by, well, okay, I almost made the mistake of saying a game is made by one person. Obviously, almost every games are made by teams of people. But the face of Marvel Snap and the studio head is this guy, Ben Brode, who was the game director on Hearthstone for many, many years. And a very visible, he was always the guy that was like front and center, sort of, you know, marketing and talking about the game too. And so, you know, obviously a lot of sort of talent and expertise on making, you know, accessible card games that are also deep and flashy, but now bringing it to, you know, the Marvel universe. It's like, it's a match made in heaven, and I'm happy to hear that, you know, it's delivering on that promise. There's too much for me to explain. I'm going to have to sum up instead. I like the game's business model. You can never, ever pay to unlock cards faster or unlock power.
Nice.
You're only paying for cosmetics and to kind of bling out your deck. Like, you know, you'll have these regular versions of a card, but what you could pay for is to get like a pixel art version of that same card. But it's the same card with the same stats and stuff like that. So I appreciate that. The game plays crazy fast, which is part of what makes it so addictive. Like each match is just a couple minutes long. And I think probably my favorite little feature of it is that it has this, it's almost like a press your luck feature where if you think you're winning, so you either win points or lose points on like the ladder, the ranked ladder, if you win or lose the game. And if you think you're going to win the game, you can hit like the snap button at any time. And then it's going to double the points that you win and your opponent's going to lose double the points and they can just retreat. They can say, no, I'm losing, or I don't think I'm going to win. And then they can just retreat instead. But that can also be like a bluffing mechanic of like, you can hit snap, like maybe if you don't think you're going to win, the hopes that like, maybe you can force them to retreat. And so the mind games involved inside of like the gameplay mechanically is simple, but it strikes this perfect balance of like simple mechanical gameplay, but every single choice you're making in the game is interesting every turn. And so
I actually like the art. Like I've been saying, I hate the art for so many Marvel games recently, and I like the art in this.
And you know, and so it's totally fully featured. Like it doesn't feel half baked or feel like a beta, but it also feels like, you know, like this is just the beginning. There's really only the one game mode, just play ladder. That's it. Like you can't play against friends yet. You can't play against, like, there's not these other modes. You're playing against the AI. And so, you know, again, it doesn't feel like half a game. It feels like a full game, but it also feels like clearly they have a roadmap of like, well, you know, what new features, new modes, new cards are we going to introduce for years to come? Like, I feel like this game has a bright future ahead of it.
What do you think, Matt?
I agree. I'm just gonna add on about the cosmetic part because Justin's absolutely right. Like you can't buy new cards for their abilities or anything like that.
I hope that works because that would be really refreshing if games switched to that.
Right? It's the art style in this game are I feel like some of the art is borrowed from maybe comic books or at the very least like uses like fame or hires famous comic book artists to draw some of these cards. Cause I feel like I recognize some of them, but yeah, there are variants where you can get a fully pixelated Wolverine and it's compelling enough for me to be, and I played enough of this to be like, yeah, maybe I do want like a fun looking Wolverine in my deck instead of this like regular angry looking Wolverine, you know?
I want to add one more thing where like the game has this, the conceit of the game is that there's three locations, like left, middle and right. And they're different on each game in each game. And each one has a different rule. Like any card played here has double power or like whatever, like each it's, you know, so no two games are the same. But what I like about that is the game isn't afraid to just make some of those lanes or some of those locations just insane, like insane effects of like, you know, like whoever, I don't know, I can't even think of an example, like whoever has the fewest number of cards here just loses the game. And so then what's normally a game where you're trying to balance between these three locations is like, now you're only fighting over one location, or it'll be something like, you know, after halfway through the game, you and your opponent like switch hands. So you give them your cards and then like you get their cards. And like, that happens one out of every eight games, like something weird and crazy that like completely flips the game on its head happens. And, you know, the card game feeling like a game and not like an esport or something, like it's not afraid to be like weird and unusual and like odd and like take its rules and say, nah, for this game, that's not going to be the rules. The game's going to play in a different way. And I appreciate that about it too.
All right. So speaking of superheroes, there's four of them in the game that Colin and I are playing. Colin, tell me about your experience with Gotham Knights so far, which we gave a 5 to today on IGN.com.
Yeah, man, what a disappointment. So as you mentioned, our reviewer Travis gave it a 5, which is a mediocre on our scale. And I completely agree with that assessment. It's just a mediocre game. I can really only think of like a couple of things it does particularly well, which to be nice. Okay, here, I'll mention them real quick. I think that the city itself is pretty well designed and well defined.
Yeah, I agree.
It's actually kind of small for an open world game, but I like that it's small. And all the different boroughs and stuff feel pretty distinct from each other. And so that feels good. And then they also do a pretty good job of, you can choose which of the four heroes you're playing as at any time. It's Nightwing, Robin, Red Hood, and Batgirl. But it's really three Robins and a Batgirl. when you do any cutscene while you're out on like these night escapades, it'll tailor that cutscene to whoever you're playing as, and it does a pretty good job.
Yeah, so like, closely that the crew that was playing this, including myself, that were all choosing different characters and playing through them, I kept them saying, well, I had brought up at one point, I'm like, the story seems really focused on Batgirl, and I'm only playing as Batgirl. Is that like that for everybody else? And like somebody else was like, oh, I thought I was going to say the same thing about Robin. So like they worked really hard on that part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So those are the two things that I have that are like particularly nice to say about this game. The combat's bad. It has none of the sort of,
if you like that,
it's extremely easy. It has none of the sort of tightness or rhythmic qualities that the Arkham games had.
Yeah.
Why change those basics?
Like,
I don't know. I'm trying not to compare it too much to those games, but it's like every other open world game copied them after that. The Spider-Man games copied them.
Yeah.
After that.
I mean, Shadow of Mordor took it too, right?
Yeah, yeah. And so they did. They made it different almost for difference sake. And it has these RPG elements that feel very superfluous, but then they kind of start forcing you into leveling up and all of this stuff. Because if you keep going through the game, I've almost beaten it. And now I'm at the point where like the main story missions are like, you need to be between like level 32 or 35 to play this mission.
It's the worst.
They don't absolutely make you do that. You can, if you want to, at like level 27, like I was, try to do one of those missions. But then it just makes every single enemy, not harder, just have way more health. to the point where like an enemy, like a sort of bruiser kind of enemy, would take genuinely like 100 hits for me to kill them. So it would basically force me to do the leveling up and grinding of an RPG, except for I don't want to do that. I don't want to do any of the side missions in this game. And the bosses in particular,
the side missions, by the way, are just like drop in on some baddies and knock them out. And then there's like a few variations.
You have to interrogate people a lot.
Yeah.
And it's just not that fun.
They're like, what you'd expect in like an open world Spider-Man game. It's like stop the crime, basically.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. And so just back
for like a couple hours, that's fine. But like grinding that stuff is ridiculous. There's no variation.
Don't
you have to do it for each character if you wanted to, you know, like. Switch over, like if you want to unlock your skill tree for another character, you have to re-grind that character. Mm-hmm. There's no respecking. Crazy. You can't carry over your points. So like even like that freedom of switching between characters, like at the point I'm at with Batgirl now, like it would be so counterproductive for me to switch to another character.
Mm.
I couldn't even fly around the city because I unlocked that with Batgirl already, and so I can't fly around the city with other characters until you grind for a long time.
How far have you lost your way making a Batman game like this where you switch characters and then can't glide anymore, like in an Arkham game?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
I guess it's my mistake. It's not an Arkham game, and maybe that's the mistake we're all making, is that it's close enough to those Arkham games that it invites the comparison.
It's the same universe, right? It's the same story, same people.
I think it's technically outside of the Arkham universe.
Oh, it is? Okay.
But still, it's
that's what was confusing me, because I was like, oh, did they introduce like Red Hood and stuff in other games? And then the answer is yes, they are in those other games. But I didn't play the later Arkham games.
Mm.
But doesn't sound like it's part of the exact same continuity then.
Yeah, it's just tricky. It just seems like a million sort of bad decisions after another were made for this game that was seemingly in development for a very long time.
Yeah,
I think this was the first game that they made since Arkham Origins, which was the worst of the Arkham games, to the point where they didn't even put it in the Arkham collection. But like in my mind, there's like two major changes that they could have made that maybe could have not had this domino effect. And they could have either focused on one person, you know, make this a Nightwing game or make this a Batgirl game. And if you want co-op, then maybe just let Robin jump in and help you out. Mm-hmm. And just tailor it to that character. Or, and someone else suggested this in our Slack for Gotham Knights, you could keep the four character thing, but make it so, like, you know, certain story missions are specifically for Red Hood or are specifically for Batgirl, because there were multiple times.
That'd be smart.
Even if
because even if Robin plays stealth, right? So that would be really smart.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And like there were some dialogue that, like, I was Nightwing the whole game pretty much. There's a part where he's like, man, Robin would really love this. And it's like, yeah, I wish that I was seeing Robin's cutscene right now. Or like a cutscene that has like very emotional stakes for Red Hood and means nothing to Nightwing. And it's just like, why? I just want to see how Red Hood would have reacted to this. And so I think they could have done the four person thing. It just it is.
Despite all that, I would play more of this game, and I'm maybe 6 or 8 hours in. I know you're towards the end, and like I did, you know, there's moments in there where I'm like, this is fun. It's just, I when I look back at what I like, you know, I'm weird because I like Arkham Asylum the best. But like when I'm trying to play that way, like just like me, like stealth from above, for example, like there's just no option for that. For example, nothing as clever as Riddler trophies. There's nothing that's, you know, about upgrading like some sort of traversal system aside from that like floaty part. But like there's nothing where it's like now you have this weapon that like allows you to get in these doors. Like there's nothing Metroid-y about it. I'm in disbelief. Like those are the great things about a Warner Brothers Batman game that were all removed. And I just don't, I think there was maybe for a cynical reason to make sure that there was co-op in it and make it a little bit more like these kind of open world games that, you know, I think Marvel's Avengers or Suicide Squad is shaping up to be even closer to. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Very, very strange decisions. Yeah. But as I said, I still want to play more of it. And I like playing through it. And so, you know, I think a little bit more highly of it than a 5. But
I think my opinion of it waned the more that I played it.
See, that could be
well happen to it. The more I was like, yeah, this is like a 7 to me. This is a good game. And okay. by the point I'm now, I'm like, yeah, this is pretty friggin' mediocre.
Yeah, those just grinding walls seem ridiculous.
Yeah, like who benefits? Who, like, you need to gain 5 more levels before doing the next main mission. Like, what? Like, why? Like, what is it in there for? Like you said, Colin, what chain of decisions led to, like, that being in this game is just baffling.
I mean, it's just time lengthening, usually, right? It's just kind of like
it's
a cynical.
Unfortunately. It's not, it's like structured like a game as a service game, but it's not.
Exactly. That's
exactly
right.
It's bizarre.
Yeah.
And so it's like, at what point was this supposed to be one? And then maybe Avengers came out and they saw how big that bombed and they were like, okay, we've got to remove this. But it's like, oh, we're halfway through development. This is what the game is right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So who knows what happened? But unfortunately, I'm not a huge fan.
Are there multiple difficulties? Like, can you set it to like easy, medium?
There are. Okay. So what I wasn't going to talk about this because I didn't want people to think that I'm a noob or anything. It was taking me so long to defeat enemies. They weren't hard. It was just taking me so long to defeat them because their health was so crazy that I genuinely went down to easy just so I could beat them faster.
I was going to say, so what I do is I don't like grinding in JRPGs when I play them. So like for Persona 5, for example, like I love the Persona games. I just don't have 60 hours to grind and like gain 10 levels just to get to the next dungeon. I usually play those games on easy, not because like the combat becomes significant, like it's too challenging for me, but I just want to experience the story and also beat the game.
Dying in an RPG can be like a 2-hour repeat too, so I don't know. That's a problem too. You got to remember, people play games for different things. If you're playing it for the aesthetics and the story and the music and everything, like Persona, most people play it for that. They don't play it for like, I want a challenge. Yeah. I'm going to go play Persona. And when I get in that school classroom, I'm going to get everything right every single time.
Yeah. Like I'm not min-maxing the party. You know, I just want to experience the fun high school lifestyle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that doesn't make Gotham Knights more fun, it sounds like. I think we need to switch over to video game 20 questions. Sound good?
Yeah.
All right. This one is from Matt from New Hampshire.
No.
And different Matt, maybe. We'll see. What if that's the meta? Let the questioning begin. I need to refresh the rules?
No, it's just 20 questions, right?
It is just 20 questions. The caveats being very few. One of them being, you know, we don't ask about like the title of the game, like right. Does it start with S, mm-hmm. stuff like that. But I think you played enough. Yeah.
Does it end with F?
That's not an actual question. He's making a goof.
No.
We share the pool, right?
You could ask that question yes. 26 times if we had 30 questions.
And we're all sharing the pool of questions, right?
You are, okay.
Yeah. And then you can't ask the name of the game. If you ask the name of the game and you're wrong, then we lose.
Oh, right.
So we can't just start guessing games. Okay. Right. Did this game come out in the 90s?
No, it did not.
Did this game come out in the aughts, so 2000 to 2009?
Negatory.
Did this game come out in the after 2009?
Yes.
Okay.
Is this game on the Nintendo Switch?
Man, it's one of those moments.
It's hard being Damon, isn't it? Like, we all give him a hard time for not knowing, but then...
He genuinely does it quite well.
The stuff that you think you would know, then you second guess yourself.
Yeah.
We should ask if
it is not on the Nintendo Switch.
Okay. It's probably not a Nintendo game either, unless Sam is really, you know, hammered.
I like that deception.
Yeah.
That's four questions.
Was this game released on a handheld device?
No, it was not.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Did this game win any of our best of end of year awards?
Any of them?
Any of them.
Yes.
Oh, interesting. Ooh. So acclaimed to some extent.
It's a spicy question. Mm. Or it won like music or something like that. Mm. You know, you never know. Okay. Was this game made in Japan?
No.
Okay. Is this game part of a famous franchise?
Oh yeah.
Oh, okay. Was this game released during the PS4 Xbox One era of consoles?
PS4 Xbox One, no.
What?
Interesting.
Yeah, it was not.
So hold on. So it's not a Switch game, a last gen game, a handheld game. It came out after 2010. So that either means it's, you know, PC, or it's, you know, it's current gen, like it's Returnal or something that's only on this gen.
Yeah. I say here. Okay. I'm going to go for it. Was this released during the PS3 360 era?
Did you? Yes.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Okay.
For some reason that was being missed by y'all, so it's good you got it.
Yeah, 2010 onwards in that era.
So really just like 2010 to like 2013 at that point. Yeah.
So late era. Okay. Was this game an exclusive to any platform?
No.
No, okay.
Was this game made by a company that
That's 10 questions.
Has or still had an E3 stage show that used to have or still has?
Justin.
Published by. That's like your question. Like, you can't be mad at me for that. That's a Sam Claiborne.
It's also, I don't know why, but it won some of our best of awards, and also it is part of a franchise. So those are
Immediately my mind went to Final Fantasy 15.
That was PS4.
I don't know if Square ever had. Oh, yeah, you're right. Thank you for that catch. Final Fantasy 13, then.
Yeah. It's also, but this game was not made in Japan.
This company has had an E3 showcase before. That's
okay. Lucky. Okay.
But not Japanese. Not Konami.
Oh, it's not Japanese. Right.
So Activision is really the only major publisher that has not had a stage show. The rest of them have at one time or another.
Yeah,
the US, like, the non-Japanese studios. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Ubisoft has EA.
Yeah, but I assume Sam would have immediately known if they had or had not had E3. You know, Ubisoft and EA.
Is this an EA game?
No.
Is this a Ubisoft game?
No.
See?
So who else had the stage show?
Oh, man.
But it's not an exclusive, so obviously not, you know, Xbox.
Yeah. Interesting. There's like Devolver.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah, this wouldn't have to be a stage show because everybody has things now, right?
Devolver's a good one.
And they, well, there's like Hotline Miami and stuff. I believe that they did one and two.
Let's see.
When we asked if it was part of a famous series, Sam said, oh, yes. And that's, I don't, true, know, like Hotline Miami, yes, part of a series, but maybe, but not
an oh, yes. Yeah. Good call. Good call. It's very interesting.
Did this game come out? Was this game, when it was initially released, a downloadable game?
No.
Physical copy. Okay.
So it's not like some tiny indie XBLA
good call
PSN
on that
game. It's not Fat Princess.
Oh, man, I kind of liked Fat Princess.
Yeah,
that's a PlayStation exclusive, though.
Yeah.
That was a question, though.
Okay. I'm just trying to think of these really esoteric, random, one-off E3 conferences that were never a part of, like, the big boys.
There were so many of them, I mean, in the past.
You know, that's not going to help you too much with this. You won't be surprised when you hear this.
So, you know, Square Enix is obviously a Japanese company, but, like, Tomb Raider, like, you know, there were games that were not made in Japan that they published. So it could still be a Square Enix game. Could be Deus Ex, Human Revolution.
How many questions have we asked?
You're at 14.
Ooh. Oh, shoot.
Hold on.
Do you want to do genre? How do we want to tackle this from here?
Does this game have a woman protagonist?
Yeah.
What? Why? What was that?
Maybe it's you can choose.
Mm.
Which could make it like Skyrim or something along those lines. Can you be a woman in Skyrim? I think you can.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can be a cat.
You can be a cat.
That's very true.
Which is why Skyrim got Game of the Year. I don't know.
Well,
that's 15. I mean,
so far aligned with a lot of stuff.
Could be Skyrim.
Would this game be considered an RPG?
No.
It's not Deus Ex. It's not Skyrim.
No, I feel like it's not Tomb Raider because of Sam's like weird response to the question.
I agree. Got to be a little bit careful playing the question answer instead of just playing the answers.
Yeah.
Got three questions and a guess.
This is around the point in 20 questions where I usually just give up.
It's late where
I'm wondering if there's a meta. I mean, there's...
Could it be a spooky?
It could be a spooky, but I think all three of the big spookies that were in this episode were all Japanese.
Mm.
It's spooky season, though.
It's true.
Are there any big non-Japanese horror game franchises? There's Fear. That was who made that? I don't know.
Yeah, but would Fear be an emphatic, part of a big series?
No.
Yeah.
Just like a secret Fear fan.
Yeah, right. Someone just really.
I mean, hell it could yeah.
For a second I thought I was clever and I thought it was Dead Space, but that's an EA game.
Yeah.
Turns out not clever. We're losing it, guys.
We are losing it. Not an RPG.
So it's interesting that they had an E3 stage presence. It's not a downloadable game only, so it's not like, you know, a Devolver. Like, I don't even know how many of those smaller companies were around in the Xbox 360 era.
Maybe this is like a Call of Duty or something, and maybe Activision did have like a one-off stage show or something.
I don't think they did.
I think we have to try to get a genre, because otherwise I think we're completely rudderless right now.
It could be a spooky game. It could be Amnesia. It could be, I mean, we don't know that it's a console game. It could be a PC game.
I mean, we have three questions. I feel like we've got...
I'm just trying to think of big franchises that would fit into this.
Big French fries.
French fries. Okay. I'm just going to go with it. Is this a shooty game?
No.
Oh.
Good. An RPG, not a shooty game. Probably some sort of character action.
A non-shooty, non-RPG, big franchise game. That feels like...
Plants vs. Zombies. Peggle.
It had a physical release. Did Peggle have a physical release?
Probably at some point. No, I don't know. Like I told you. I already told you I've given up.
Justin's out.
Justin's out.
Yeah, basically, except a troll.
What?
Unless it comes to me in like a flash, which happens when every other game.
You wait till 19 for that is when that happens.
Yeah. Why are there so many video games? What was our questions regarding platforms? What did we ask already?
We know it's multi-platform, mm-hmm. and we know it's not on a handheld platform.
It's on, and of the PS3 360 generation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and the PS3 360 generation, and it's not made in Japan.
But after 2010.
It's
not an RPG.
Did we eliminate Ubisoft or did we just breeze right by
it? No, we asked Ubisoft and EA.
Yeah.
Is this a PC exclusive?
No.
Well, then we got one question left.
One question and a guess, or this is it?
Yeah, one Q and a G.
Man.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong about Activision. I don't think so.
I don't know what other big games they would have had outside of a shooty.
Crash Bandicoot.
Yeah, but not at that point.
Yeah.
Tony Hawk.
Not at that point would it have been, you know, a Game of the Year winner, I don't think. Maybe Tony Hawk.
Yeah, would have won Best Pop Punk Soundtrack of the Year.
You could have won a Best Sports Game, I guess, technically.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to take it away from you, Colin.
You still have a question.
Yeah, if you have a question, like, go for it.
I don't. I mean, I'm so stuck. I feel like
I will say some of our most common questions would solve this for y'all immediately, and they haven't been asked.
I should watch more of this.
Have we mentioned the name of this game already?
No.
Oh, no.
No. What are our other most common questions?
No, that's it. That just ruined it for us because now we're done.
Now we got a guess. Do we each get a guess, or do we just?
No, you just get one guess. You get to agree on. However, you can also just wave the white flag.
Forfeit. Yeah. Well, I give up.
Justin, just really quick, what are some of the
Justin.
What are some of the biggest questions?
Yeah.
I don't know, dude. Like, I've done this show. I've played 20 questions literally
hundreds of times.
And I can't. It's like it's new each time.
I feel like we asked all the good questions.
I don't ever learn anything. That's why I asked, have we mentioned the name of this game before? Because I feel
All right, ready to call it?
Yeah.
All right. Here.
Well, hold on. You can throw out a guess.
I'll throw out a guess.
I don't even think that this lines up with the dates, but are you sure you're fine with me just saying a friggin' game?
I mean, if you want to say the name, I'll say you can agree on the game.
I'll up
first.
Or down.
Okay.
I'm ready to go eat dinner. Like, I'm out of here.
Okay. I also want to go home. But
I will say Portal 2.
Okay.
It is not Portal 2.
That's a pretty good guess.
That's a good guess, though. All right. So this game was, as Colin was getting at, a character action game. The question I would have expected to ask maybe is this a licensed game? It is indeed part of a meta because it is a game that we've all talked about today. It is from New Hampshire, Arkham City from 2011, Rocksteady London. WB has had a few of those weird one-off conferences. Came out for 360, PS3, PC, and Wii U originally. Of course, it was ported to other things. We gave it a 9.5 of 10.
You said, yes, this had a female protagonist.
It does. So you can play as Catwoman through the entire game.
Yeah, that's right.
Man.
Through the entire game.
The entire game.
You can.
That is wild.
Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah.
Well.
Okay. Well, I'm just disappointed in myself.
Well, Matt says, with the upcoming or recent, depending on when you read this, release of Gotham Knights, I thought it would be a great time to have one of my favorite games of all time and one of the few I've ever 100% completed. That's like 400 plus collectibles.
Yeah.
Arkham City as the 20 questions game. So thank you, Matt.
I think generally moving forward, we should stop trying to get a decade right away. I think the question should be, was this game released in this century?
No, the hack is this from the 70s, 80s, 90s, or 2000s? All right. We all need to go. So that's all the scoops we have this week. Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Colin. Remember, you can get in touch with us at gamescoop@ign.com if you have 20 questions, suggestions, or you can just send us 20 questions and maybe we'll answer them over 20 episodes.
We won't.
I've already said thank you to everybody. So now I can just say, this has been Game Scoop. We're out.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.